Welcome to Cats Cast, your weekly feline fiction podcast. This is episode 341 for April 1st, 2021. I'm your host, Laura Perlman, and I have one quick announcement. Starting today, we're taking this podcast in a slightly different direction. I'll go into detail later in the episode, but if you notice something different about today's story, that's why. Our story this week is Bargain by Sarah Gailey. This story first appeared in Mothership Zeta in December 2015. Dog owner, Hugo Award winner, and best-selling author Sarah Gailey is an internationally published writer of fiction and nonfiction. Their nonfiction has been published by Mashable and the Boston Globe. Their short fiction credits include Vice and The Atlantic. Their debut novella, River of Teeth, was a 2018 Hugo and Nebula Award finalist. Their best-selling adult novel debut, Magic for Liars, was published in 2019. Their most recent novel, The Echo Wife, is available now. You can find links to their work at www.sarahgailey.com and on social media at GaileyFrey. Your narrator this week is Trendane Sparks. Originally born in Texas, Trend Sparks eventually escaped and wound his way through a mystical series of jobs in the San Francisco Bay Area, where he has worked as a software QA tester for both graphics drivers and video games, a freelance mascot performer, and several jobs on a PBS kids show. For most of his life, people have told him that his voice is a pleasure to listen to. But since being a werewolf phone sex operator can get boring, he decided to use his powers to entertain a broader audience. Now, find a quiet spot, stretch out in the sun, and let us tell you a tale.
Bargain by Sarah Gailey, narrated by Trend Sparks. Malachi loved his work. He loved wandering among the trappings of enormous wealth and influence, seeing the baubles that humans excreted to express their status. He especially loved watching those wealthy, influential mortals tremble before the might of his inescapable superiority. Malachi worked exclusively with those humans who had found themselves at the limit of how much power they could possess. They called him to bend the rules of time and space around their whims so that they might be even more feared and loved by other mortals. Their desires were predictable: money, knowledge, talent, authority, the kinds of people who hunted down ancient parchments with the words of invocation inscribed upon them. These were the kinds of people who did not concern their consciences with the compensation Malachi required for his services. They appreciated a bit of theatrical flair. So, when he received the summons from dispatch, he responded with appropriate formality. Curling smoke, crackling lightning, the wailing of damned souls, a standard business casual entrance. He waited for his cue, which was usually the sound of a man discovering terror for the first time in his comfortable life. Once that terror had peaked, Malachi would announce himself. Any sooner, and the human would get swept up in proceedings before their fear really set the tone. Thus, on this and all assignments, Malachi waited to hear the panic and the wailing and the what-have-I-wroughts. He waited for quite some time. He looked around, waving his hands to clear some of the lingering smoke, which was actually just high-quality steam. They never noticed the difference, and real smoke would have aggravated his asthma. The result was visually pleasing and left his suit wrinkle-free, but occasionally served to obscure a mortal who was too frightened to plead at the proper volume. Malachi arranged himself into a posture of menace and waited for the last of the steam to dissipate. There was nobody in the room. Malachi frowned in puzzlement. There were rooster-shaped salt-and-pepper shakers on a well-used round table, and a sign hung over the door that read, "If you want breakfast in bed, sleep in the kitchen." This didn't make sense. He didn't do domestic calls. A massive brown Labrador lolloped around the corner, his tail waving frantically. Malachi narrowed his eyes and bared his fangs at the dog. He projected threatening thoughts, visions of Labradors being eaten by bigger, scarier dogs, visions of thunder and flooding and tigers pouncing on unsuspecting puppies, visions of the hounds of hell shaking off their chains and storming the little kitchen in search of a mortal morsel. The dog smelled Malachi's shoes, and, ignoring Malachi's strenuous objection, also smelled Malachi's crotch, with great interest. He waffled to himself about the results and sat. His tail thumped on the linoleum. Malachi stared at the dog, looked over his shoulder. Nobody there. Just him and the dog. He crouched in front of the beast and looked into the large, vacant brown eyes. First time for everything.
Did you summon me?
The dog panted happily and continued thumping his tail.
I summoned you. He's a dog. He can't read archaic Latin.
A woman walked into the kitchen. Malachi was not good at guessing mortal age, but his best estimate placed her around 300 years old. She was upright and walking, but relied heavily on a dull aluminum cane. Her back was straight and her eyes were clear, and Malachi assessed her as aware of her encroaching mortality, but not intimidated by it. Malachi drew himself to his fullest, most menacing height, and began billowing smoke, well, steam. He drew breath to begin his terrible introductions. The dog stood and nudged a cold, wet nose into Malachi's hand.
Oh, go on and pet him, would you? He's going to start pouting if you don't. And enough with the special effects. We have a lot to discuss and not much time.
Malachi turned to the woman and allowed the fires of hell to blaze behind his eyes. He hissed in a fashion he had picked up from a colleague with a uniquely crocodilian aspect. The dog whined softly and nudged at his hand again. The woman lowered herself into a chair at the kitchen table and raised her eyebrows pointedly at Malachi.
Pet Baxter, and then let's begin.
The hellfire and hissing hadn't worked. There was only one explanation. This was a mistake. The woman was old for a mortal, and if he recalled his training, humans started to peter out around 350 years or so. And she had probably intended to place an order for a new pelvis or lawn furniture or something. She just didn't realize who he was. It had never happened to him before, but it wasn't unheard of. Someone means to say, "Operator, please connect me to Home Shopping Network customer support." But they have a stutter, and what comes out is instead an archaic Latin summoning of a pestilent creature. He turned off the theatrics, petted Baxter on the head, and smiled at the poor, foolish old woman. She did not smile back at him. "Ma'am, I think you've got the wrong number." No need to scare her. Malachi liked to startle the hubris out of mortals, but causing cardiac arrest in little old ladies gave him no particular satisfaction. He would approach this gently.
"Oh?"
A look of very mild concern crossed her brow.
"Well, then, who are you?"
Malachi was not used to delivering this next part without a certain amount of panache, but he tried to subdue his tone so as not to shock the woman too badly. Only a small rumble of thunder trickled out. He was proud of his restraint.
"I am the great and ominous Malachi, devourer of miscreants, archduke of nightmares, usurper of souls. I am he who is called Despair."
Her brow unfurrowed, and she gave a satisfied nod.
"It was you I wanted, all right. Please take a seat. My name is Lydia. Would you like some tea? I have lemon zinger and sleepy time."
The Archduke of Nightmares patted Baxter's flank as his lemon zinger steeped.
"Baxter is getting on in years, but he's too dumb to realize it. Just like he's too dumb to be afraid of you."
Lydia's hands shook slightly as she lifted her own teacup. The teacup was misshapen and had "Number One Grandma" painted across the front in drippy glaze.
"Or maybe he's like me. too old to be afraid of you."
Baxter laid his head on Malachi's knee and sighed with deep contentment. The usurper of souls tried to shove the dog away to no avail. Malachi felt awkward. He had always held a strong position during negotiations. He would arrive with smoke, steam, lightning, baying of hounds, etc., and then he would speak his title. The person who had summoned him would wet themselves or drop a glass and start gibbering tearfully, and then they would plead for mercy, and they would offer the life of whatever chump they had available, and then the bargaining could begin. This woman did not seem to know the procedures. He fidgeted in his chair and scratched Baxter's huge, blocky head. "So then, frail mortal."
"Oh, please, no need to be so formal. Call me Lydia."
"So then, Lydia, do you know the covenant which you so foolishly invoke at your peril?"
He rolled the R in peril to make up for the loss of frail mortal.
"Oh, yes, Malachi, I know."
"What foolish mortal have you designated to fulfill the bargain?"
"Myself."
Lydia folded her hands on the table with an air of finality.
"And where is the foolish mo-"
"Wait, what?"
"I will pay."
Malachi retracted his claws enough to gently lay a hand on her wrist. "No, Lydia, I'm asking who you're going to sacrifice. Look, I really don't think you get how this works." Lydia looked at him coolly.
"I understand quite well. You grant a request, and you take a soul. Well, I am making a request, and then you are going to grant it, and then you'll take my soul as payment. This is not difficult to understand, dear."
Malachi shook his head. He was deeply relieved to find that this was not going to work. "I can't bill you in arrears. Payment up front. Sorry, it's policy. Nothing I can do about it." He stood to leave. "Thank you for the tea." Lydia rapped a gnarled knuckle sharply on the wooden tabletop.
"Sit down, young man. We are not finished here."
Malachi brushed dog fur off of his suit pants.
"Look, lady, I can't help you.
Sit ye down, pestilent creature."
Her words were imbued with the power of the summoner. Malachi eased back into his chair. The power of the summoner had not been wielded against him in some time. He thought the practice had died out long ago. Baxter returned his head to Malachi's lap and drooled agreeably on his knee.
"Now,"
the old woman pursed her lips at the demon,
"I know the bargain. I'm not stupid, and it's not complicated. I don't need to be alive for my request to be granted."
Malachi's front two sets of ears perked in spite of his intent to sulk. So she did know the procedures, and the technicalities. Lydia noticed his interest and continued with greater confidence.
"I want you to save my wife. She has cancer, and she's going to die, and I want you to make it so that she lives."
Heaviness settled over the room. Mortals and their cancer. They were always getting cancer. Tears shimmered briefly in Lydia's eyes. Malachi looked at Baxter, giving the mortal a moment to collect herself. He rubbed the dog's velvet ears.
"So you want me to save her and take you?"
He did not lift his gaze from the top of Baxter's head. Lydia sniffed delicately.
"Yes, I want you to make her young and healthy again. Not too young, mind you. She was happiest around 35. I remember because it was our 10th anniversary, and she turned to me and said, 'This is the best I've ever felt.' And we laughed because, you know, we were supposed to be these middle-aged women now, and...
She broke off and put a hand over her eyes. Malachi was embarrassed for her. Fear displays he could handle, but this was out of his wheelhouse. Hoping to escape her tears, he crouched on the floor to rub Baxter's belly. The dog let out a deep groan like the timbers of an old ship settling. Lydia laughed as she patted her cheeks with a napkin.
That's a good sound from him.
Before he could stop himself, Malachi laughed too.
I know. We have some hounds at HQ that make the same noise when we feed them thieves' souls. When he looked back up at Lydia, she was smiling sadly.
So, I've said my goodbyes. I'm ready whenever you are. Deborah's just in the other room. Would you like to see her? Do you need to be in the same room to do it? She won't know you're here, I'm afraid. Palliative care.
Malachi did not want to see the dying female. He also did not want to take Lydia's soul. For the first time in his career, he did not want to do his job. Lydia folded her hands on the table again, a gesture of infinite patience. He stalled desperately.
Wait, how did you know how to summon me?
Lydia smiled.
I'm a snoop. I found it in Deborah's diary.
Where did she get it?
Lydia shrugged.
How should I know? Is it important?
She was growing impatient.
We don't have long. The doctor said she could go at any moment. Do I need to sign anything?
Hearing her sharp tone, Baxter whined and dropped his ears, a portrait of canine guilt. Lydia scratched under his collar.
Good boy. Don't worry. I'm not mad at you.
Malachi wanted to stall more, but didn't want Baxter to blame himself for Lydia's frustration, so he came clean.
I don't want to take your soul, Lydia. This is a bad arrangement. Sacrifices, they're meant to be selfish. Most people kidnap someone or trick a spouse or buy a baby on the black market. It's supposed to be, you know...
He looked at her meaningfully, but her face remained blank.
Evil!
Lydia frowned.
Well, I don't want to kidnap anyone, and I only get one request, right? You can't make us both young again, so why would I want to stick around? To be old and alone? No thank you.
She folded her thin arms across her chest with an air of decision. Malachi didn't like the feeling of conspiring with a foolish mortal, but he felt compelled by propriety. This woman was doing it all wrong. He lowered his voice.
I could probably do it if you held hands with her and if you phrased it just right.
I demand that you make us young and hale again, pestilent creature.
Something like that.
But you still need a sacrifice. And I'm sorry, but I don't have anyone else to give you.
Baxter rolled onto his back, hoping to elicit more belly rubs. Malachi looked down at the old dog, then back up at Lydia.
You can't think of anyone?
The office was massive. A wall of windows looked out over a sparkling city. The spotless desk was made from brushed platinum. The desk chair was upholstered in premium tiger leather. Several overstuffed armchairs were poised around a coffee table made from interlocking elephant tusks. A man in a white suit stood facing a towering fireplace, his hands clasped behind his back. In the fireplace, a sheet of ancient parchment smoldered and crackled. On a panda skin rug, his captive writhed, struggling to free herself from her bonds before she was to be sacrificed. The man turned as he finished the invocation, prepared to face the demon. He would dominate it, bend it to his will. He would own this city. He would own the world. Smoke steam billowed through the room. A peal of thunder sounded from somewhere near the brushed platinum desk, and a bolt of lightning split the ivory table in two. The hounds of hell snarled their rage and woofled their interest in belly rubs, and the man in the white suit could hear the crackling of their iron chains as they strained to tear his soul from his body with monstrous gnashing teeth. A figure appeared in the smoke. No. Two figures.
I am the great and ominous Malachi, devourer of miscreants, archduke of nightmares, usurper of souls, master of the Hound of Chaos.
The man in the white suit cowered. A dark stain spread across the front of his slacks. The Hound of Chaos farted softly.
Baxter, damn it! You...
Sit, Baxter, sit. The man in the white suit coughed.
Please, oh ye harbinger, I beg your mercy!
The Hound of Chaos sat and thumped his tail against the platinum desk. The devourer of miscreants fed him a treat and clicked a little metal training tab before rounding on the man in the white suit.
Frail mortal, do you know the covenant which you so foolishly invoke at your own...
Baxter, down. No, don't pet him. He needs to learn not to jump up on people. Baxter, sit. Malachi gave up. The Hound of Chaos was well on his way to becoming a suitable companion, but he had no sense of theater at all. The Archduke of Nightmares let out a sigh as the man in the white suit rubbed the hound's velvet ears and repeatedly affirmed his status as a very good dog. It had been worth it, though. It had been worth it to see Lydia and Deborah together, young again, so in love. That had been his first time seeing mortals weep with anything other than terror, and it had been worth the farting and the crotch-sniffing and the endless, constant shedding. And besides, Malachi thought, even if Baxter lacked a sense of theater, he really was a very good dog.
And April Fools. Sorry, I just couldn't resist. This week's story is borrowed from our friends at Pseudopoodle, the premier horror podcast for dogs and all who love them. Don't worry though, next week we'll be back to all cats, all the time. A dog's death isn't usually a happy occurrence, but it is in this story. Baxter seems to be enjoying his role as the Hound of Chaos, and why wouldn't he? He's clearly an extrovert, and he gets to meet lots of new people. He's also good at his new job, or bad at it, depending on your perspective. We've seen him twice break down the barriers in what were supposed to be adversarial negotiations. That seems particularly relevant in this year of Zoom calls, where cats and dogs and children have popped up and made work or school or, in the case of that lawyer cat, even court proceedings a little more human. If you like today's story, you can read about Baxter and Malachi's further adventure in the sequel Rescue, but you won't hear it here because this is a cat podcast. Today's episode is brought to you by audio producer Peter Baravesh, art director Matt Dovey, editor Laura Perlman, and executive producer Marguerite Kenner. The opening and closing music is Easy Lemon by Kevin MacLeod. Cat's Cast is a production of Escape Artists Incorporated and is brought to you with a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License. Don't change it, don't sell it, please do share it. Cat's Cast relies on the generous donations of listeners like you. If you enjoyed today's episode, please consider donating via Patreon/EA Podcasts or through the website escapeartists.net. Or come say hello to us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. If you didn't enjoy the episode, please let us know on the Escape Artists Discord server, which you can gain access to by supporting our Patreon at the $5 level or above. For cat pictures, cat story recommendations, and more, follow Cat's Cast Pod on Twitter. Our closing quote is from Dave Barry, who said, "Dogs would make totally incompetent criminals. If you could somehow get a group of dogs to understand the concept of the Kennedy assassination, they would all immediately confess to it. Whereas you'll never see a cat display any kind of guilty behavior, despite the fact that several cats were seen in Dallas on the grassy knoll area, not that I wish to start rumors." Thanks for listening, and remember to get plenty of rest, wash your paws frequently throughout the day, and make sure you get all your shots. Ah!
How much is that doggy in the window? Their bark left you haunted and pale. Deep down, do they know if they're a good boy? Or if Sanity's ship has set sail? Escape Artist presents Pseudo Poodle, the premier horror podcast exclusively by and for the ones with a waggly tail.